Hello again, and welcome back to the Slow Flowers Podcast with Deborah Prinzing, episode 210. This is the weekly podcast about American flowers and the people who grow and design with them. It's all about making a conscious choice, and I invite you to join the conversation and the creative community as we discuss the vital topics of saving our domestic flower farms and supporting a floral industry that relies on a safe, seasonal, and local supply of flowers and foliage. This podcast is brought to you by slowflowers.com, the free nationwide online directory to florists, shops, and studios who design with American-grown flowers and to the farms that grow those blooms. It's the conscious choice for buying and sending flowers. And a special thanks to our lead sponsor for 2015, the California Cut Flower Commission, committed to making a difference as an advocate for American-grown flowers. Learn more at ccfc.org. This week's guest is my very good friend and flower sister, Melissa Fevier, owner and creative director of Terra Bella Flowers in Seattle. Melissa's appearance on the Slow Flowers podcast is especially exciting this week because she and her work will be showcased at the next Field to Vase dinner set for Saturday, September 12th at Jellamold Farm in Mount Vernon, just north of Seattle. Only 10 designers in the country have been invited to create the floral installation for the Field to Vase Dinner series, a very special pop-up floral-centric dining experience pairing local flowers and local food. It is fitting that Melissa is the featured designer this week because she is a longtime customer of Jellamold Farm and the entire floral community of the Seattle Wholesale Growers Market. You'll hear us discuss her role in the market's origins as the first cooperative marketplace connecting local flower farmers with local florists. The visionary of Terra Bella Flowers, Melissa combines her obsession with all things rooting and a background in environmental studies and hazardous waste management. After working in the field and becoming aware of the amount of pesticides used in the production of cut flowers, she realized she couldn't consciously support the conventional side of the floral industry. Melissa created Terra Bella Flowers nearly 10 years ago to prove that the business of flowers can be a beautiful thing from the time the seed is planted until her bouquet arrives at your door. As we discuss in this episode, Melissa and her business are featured in The 50 Mile Bouquet, the book I wrote in 2012 featuring the photography of David Perry. As a special gift to you, I've included the free chapter, which you can download so you can read more of Melissa's story. That's available as part of our show notes at deborahprinzing.com. I began that chapter with this description of Melissa. Curiosity and intentionality are two of her design tools. She selects foliage, blooms, and other fresh-from-the-field elements with the same care as if she personally grew each ephemeral blossom or stem in her own backyard. That connection with nature is vitally important to her artistic philosophy. And this was her quote, "If flowers aren't grown locally or organically, then they are most likely coming from some huge factory farm. My customers do not want flowers dipped in strong pesticides on their dinner table." Well, Melissa has been a fabulous supporter of slowflowers.com from the moment it was just an idea of mine. She has contributed her time and talents, appearing on the 2014 Indiegogo campaign video that helped raise more than $18,000 to launch our online directory. We've teamed up to promote Slow Flowers on local television and at special events, and I know you'll find Melissa and her story inspiring. Please enjoy our conversation today and visit deborahprinzing.com to see photos, find links, and other resources to connect with Melissa and Terra Bella Flowers. Welcome back to the Slow Flowers Podcast with Deborah Prinzing, and today I'm thrilled to introduce my guest and friend, Melissa Fevier. Melissa is the owner and creative director of Terra Bella Flowers in Seattle. Hi, Melissa.
Hi.
It's great to be sitting here in your shop. We just locked the front door.
Yes.
So now we can hopefully just smell the flowers and talk. Melissa, I have so much I want to talk about with you and share with our listeners, but I'll just give a little background for the audience, and you jump in and correct me if I say anything wrong. Melissa and I met, we think in 2009, we were maybe 8 or 9, through Diane Sukavati of Jellamold Farm, and Diane at the time was selling direct to flower shops, and she was one of your suppliers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we met. And when I met you, you were one of the first florists who I truly felt walked the talk. your philosophy of organic, local, seasonal was really a distinction that many people had not adopted yet. Don't you feel like you're one of the pioneers in this sort of new wave of floral design? Pat yourself on the back.
I do. It was a lot of footwork before the market started because I'd have to go to different farmers' markets and make a relationship with all the individual farmers because there wasn't one central location for me to buy local and sustainably grown flowers. When I started my business in 2006, there was some organic, commercial organic production, but when the economy hit rock bottom, that organic production slowed down, and so it really affected my sourcing ability, and so it had to be all locally grown, and it was a little exhaustive going from one market to another grower, to another farm, just so I can keep a continual supply of fresh flowers in my cooler.
Wow. I didn't realize that, but that makes sense that after the economy, it just became harder to source specialty flowers in a niche that wasn't mass market.
Correct.
So when we first met, I was working on the 50-mile bouquet, and David Perry and I were determined to, you know, feature Tarabella and you in the book, but we hadn't even really gotten to that point yet of creating the final idea of the book when, this is the story as it goes from my point of view, my agent said, you need one more chapter in your prototype before I can take this book out and shop it around to publishers. And you need kind of a how-to DIY, how to throw a party with flowers chapter that you and David should photograph and write and do as a sample. And I said, okay, but it's January in Seattle. And here she was like, well, I don't care. Figure it out. And so we called you and said, Melissa, would you be willing to do a photo shoot with us on spec in the dead of winter using only local and sustainable flowers? And you miraculously pulled it out of thin air and created the most beautiful arrangement and beautiful story. And you foraged a lot, and you sourced a lot, and I learned so much from you on that photo shoot. Were you even daunted by that, or did you just say, sure, I can figure it out?
Oh, I knew I could figure it out because I did on a regular basis already for my customers.
That's true, those January customers.
And I just had to say thank God for Peter Court Roses over in Portland, Oregon, because they were my main color pop of flowers for that time of year for very, very regional. You know, there's always California, but we were trying to keep it so Northwest specific for that one photo shoot. So
it was a dream to have that photo shoot, to have your voice, your story. I remember even you had some tulips that were from the winter crops of Elm Hill.
Right, Elm Hill.
And David photographed you shopping for them at the Pike Place Market. So we had a beautiful chapter. And I think that contributed a lot to us being able to get that book sold to St. Lin's Press. And it was published in 2012. And our friendship continued after that through the start of the Seattle Wholesale Growers Market. Can you talk a little bit about how you got involved in the founding of the Seattle Wholesale Growers Market, which was, I believe, in 2011?
Right. So I was, like I said, going from one grower to another to a grower, and I joined the Specially Cut Flower Growers Association.
Oh, right, ASCFG.
Correct. I became a member so that I could have more of a resource and connect with a greater number of growers in this area. And at one of the regional meetings, we're like, they needed to find more places instead of just a competitive regional farmers market for their flowers, and I needed them instead of going from one market to another.
Which
isn't
efficient.
And so at that point in time, we just said, well, why don't we create a market? Why don't we create a wholesale market, just a cooperative of all local growers? And so that was when it began.
Right, but you were the only florist in that conversation, as I recall.
There was Stacy Sutliff from North. She was a part of that conversation as well. And given her proximity, she really didn't get on board with the organizing and the creation of the market, but she was definitely an influential in that initial meeting.
And she's in the 50-mile bouquet, too.
Correct.
But you're right. Stacy kind of lives and works closer to the farms. You're here in the city, but you're where the customer base is, right?
Right.
So you became one of the founding members of the Seattle Wholesale Growers Market,
right,
as a non-farmer.
I was working as a distributor for Peter Court Roses, mm-hmm. Elm Hill, all the different growers that couldn't physically be there on market days to sell their own product. So I represented their product there.
So I look back on that time, which ironically is only 4 years ago, and see how valuable it was to the farmers to have a florist at the table with them. I think you opened their eyes to a lot of the needs of the design, event, wedding side of the business that they didn't really know.
Right, because weddings and events was a whole different marketplace from a standard farmer's market,
right.
And the needs are different, and the trends that need to be following with each wedding, like, you know, the cafe au lait phenomena that it is.
Yeah, like what is Pinterest driving every bride
exactly.
to do?
Exactly.
Wow, and so that you've evolved then, because you, at the same time you were doing that, which was like one job, you were still operating Terra Bella Flowers. And you've transitioned out of that role with the market, and we served as board members for a while, mm-hmm. and then you stepped up, your term ended, and someone else stepped in as the florist rep, Emily Anderson of Lola Floral,
correct.
Who's been on this podcast. Tell our listeners about your journey to open Terra Bella Flowers. How old is this business?
We are going on our 10th year.
Oh, congratulations. Mazel tov. That's cool.
Yeah. And I grew up in the floral industry. My aunt owned a flower shop. It was a very conventionally run FTD teleflora sort of shop. And when I started getting a job out of high school, the first thing I did, of course, was get a job in a flower shop. It was just in the blood.
And where was that? California, right?
That was in California. And I went to school with the intention of doing a landscape design management based around hazardous waste management and cleaning up hazmat sites and creating landscapes, common spaces. And I kept going back to flowers because that was my safe, happy place. It just brought me peace when, you know, talking about hazardous waste management and pesticides, I needed an outlet.
And, this is sort of left brain, right brain, right?
Right. And so the more I learned about pesticides and the use and the environment, and I started kind of making that correlation of how the floral industry itself was a really, really dirty industry. Mm-hmm. And these beautiful flowers have such an ugly past. And so I decided to open my own flower shop, but I couldn't do it the conventional way. I needed to make sure that my flowers were being sourced sustainably, they were helping support the community instead of being detrimental to the communities where they're coming from. And that's yeah. what all began.
Wow. And your design skills, you had enough of that that kind of talent in your toolbox because you grew up in the industry, but you've really defined this loose, naturalistic, you know, kind of from the garden look as probably a lot different than what you did when you were working as a kid for your aunt in terms of design style.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah. There's during the 80s, it was, I'm that old. It was
well, you were like five.
It was all, you know, very, very structured, your roundy moundies,
yeah.
or your triangles. And there wasn't anything left reminiscent of a garden or where these flowers actually came from in the designs themselves.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so landscaping design, having that background definitely has influenced my design style. I also trained in Europe for a year. I went to floral design school in San Francisco. So I've kind of, and Ikebana, I've had
yeah.
Ikebana training as well. So I've kind of just mashed it all together.
I love it. And that's really true because I see you as kind of this, Northwest, fairy. And you just have this like ability to forage and to source from unusual, you know, growers that aren't necessarily what you would expect to see in the cut flower industry. Maybe people who are growing plants instead, and you're kind of drawing from all those disciplines now with the Terra Bella look, and I love that you've been a leader in that as well, because look at how many people you've trained in this industry in the last 10 years who've come through this shop and gotten a dose of your philosophy about sourcing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, the other thing that I guess I'm excited to talk about is, well, two things. One is you are the president of the Greater Seattle Floral Association, right? So is that still going on?
That is correct.
Okay, so that's like a real industry collective of peers who are professionals.
It's a fantastic organization. Mm-hmm.
So how does that kind of dovetail with what you're doing and what you had done with the market? Are you seeing that your peers who are all wedding and event designers and maybe retail florists, or are you the only one right now?
So far, I'm the only retail florist, and I'd like that to change. But for the most part, they're all event planners.
Yeah, are they event florists? Are they taking the same approach to sourcing, or does it just depend on the florist and the designer?
It really depends on the florist. There isn't those standards mm-hmm. within this organization. We're just here to bump ideas off of each other, and we certainly have meeting topics of how to create like sustainable arches, how alternatives to floral foam, how are we going to make this hold up in the high heat of summer outside on a beach, or just a very supportive network.
What I see you guys have done as a collective group is to professionalize what wedding and event floral design is, and you're giving customers a single place to come and learn about how vibrant this community is and how many choices they have for finding a designer to work with mm-hmm. who's going to reflect their style. And I don't know that a lot of communities have a group like yours.
I don't know yeah, that they do.
It seems like it's really, you're very much mutually supportive of each other while also competitors. And I think that I want to encourage people to check out the website and just see how you guys have structured it, because it could inspire other communities to do, designers in other communities to do something similar. If you're confident about your brand and who you are and what you can bring to a customer, you're not worried about what the competition's doing.
We're all doing our own thing.
Yeah.
And so there really isn't that a competitive edge between us.
You probably refer business to each other.
We do all the time and say, hey, I've got a bride. It's on this date. I'm already booked. Does anybody want to contact her? Or I need this arch. And does anybody have this particular shape, this height that I can rent from you? I have all these extra vases. Does anybody want them? Or I have all these leftover dahlias. Does somebody want to absorb them off of me? So
that's cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
So we're really, really there to support each other. And we talk about the different floral trends that are happening and the different varieties and what's going on at the markets and who we're sourcing from. And
yeah. So maybe just by being a leader in that community, you're modeling for your peers how you are successful with this American grown sourcing philosophy. Mm-hmm. People are aware of your style, so maybe your work speaks for itself. What I see about Terrabella is the way you've structured this is that you're a retail flower shop, but you also have, you don't rely only on walk-ins. You have this very extensive regular customer base. Can you talk a little bit about how the store is divided up? Like if you divided up the pie, what are your major channels of business for keeping the door open?
We actually just did a little digging into our sales, and surprisingly, we have it split evenly between the three categories of walk-in sales, of phone sales, of web incoming web orders, because we've designed our own website
right.
with
oh,
our
cool.
own floral design images on there. But it's user-friendly, just as you would be ordering off of 1-800-Flowers. But it's with our own designs, and it comes straight through us. So
wow. And so people are calling you from all over the country then, because they can look on your website and see what your aesthetic is.
All over the world, people can order online.
Wow. Do you have any idea what search fields they're putting in? Just Seattle Florist, or locally grown, or
they're looking for Seattle florist, local florist, sustainable florist, mm-hmm. organic florist is the main one they're looking for, and mm-hmm. so our shop pops up. Our tagline has been local, organic, and sustainably or consciously grown flowers,
okay.
and so we do have a selection of flowers that are going to be organically grown, even but not necessarily organically certified.
Right, right.
We have clients that are very chemically sensitive, and so we can go through and describe what flowers we have in that's going to fit their fit their needs and what colors and varieties. So we can always have something that's going to be good. We work with a lot of chefs because they need edible flowers. And so we do have some occasionally or certified organic flowers, but
you at least can be confident about the growing practices that they're organic, even though they're not certified.
Exactly.
I actually was really impressed when I first met you and you told me that there was this subset of customers who were people with chemical sensitivities, and I had no idea how extreme that impact of a chemically treated flower was if it went into someone's home who could have this allergic reaction or this sort of respiratory reaction or whatever because something had been maybe dipped in formaldehyde. So mm-hmm. you just had an awareness about that.
Right. Having the hazardous waste management background yeah. really helped with that one.
So how big is your flower shop? Is it, it's a corner space. Do you know what the square footage is?
We're just under 1,000 square feet.
Wow. Well, we'll have to show photos on my show notes of the shop. It's so beautiful. I, of course, come in here and just pretend that I'm in a distant land playing with flowers and looking at all your beautiful findings. I mean, you sell some books and some gifts, but lots of vases, mm-hmm. Plants, and candles. You've got tons of candles
we
and soaps.
We have candles, and we're a gift shop, so yeah. We have the cards and candles and locally made perfumes and
ooh.
Yeah, and cards. Locally made vases.
Well, and you're on a really busy pedestrian corridor, and so that really helps as well. I mean, mm-hmm. you just have that. That's what the walk-in client is coming from.
The walk-in client, and I love being. Yeah, it might be more cost-effective for me to be running out of a studio, but I love the old-fashioned idea of being your corner flower shop in the neighborhood where you can come in and have that experience of touching, feeling, smelling all the flowers, because you, outside of a grocery store, you know, you don't have that access in the dead of winter in particular.
Very few neighborhoods have this kind of independent brick-and-mortar flower shop experience anymore. I it's sad. You see the empty storefronts in a strip mall and think, well, there goes another one. So
I know. I feel like we're a dying breed.
Yeah.
We need more people, more flower shops.
You're special because you've created a community. You do workshops here. You do events here. You're open during the art walk every single month, right? Isn't that like the community after
the
hours
second
thing?
Friday of the month.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're just engaging with this very densely populated neighborhood, which is terrific. Because you're obviously people coming here to buy plants because there's no garden center up here. So you're filling that need too. Well, Melissa, we have something big coming up next weekend. I say we because I've been working on the Field to Vase dinners, and you are the featured florist for the Field to Vase dinner in Seattle. Yes, she's not tired yet. the dinner is going to be September 12th, and this will run before that, so people have a chance to hear from you about your plans for the design. You've been invited to be the featured florist. We're so glad because you really are the perfect person to do this. Your relationship with these farmers goes back longer than anybody's in this design community. The farm that's the host is Jellamold, which again, Diana's a dear friend and Dennis is a dear friend of both of ours. How are you going to approach adorning a farm table that stretches through the dahlia fields seemingly endlessly to reflect the season and to reflect kind of your interpretation of what is this place and time using all local flowers? You've got a few things up your sleeve. Maybe you're like me. I don't know what I'm writing till I write it. I think you know what you're going to design before you design it, right?
No, we've got a good game plan. We have some all-American-made vases that were donated by Syndicate Sales.
Oh, that'll be great.
And we'll be putting some floating candles, also U.S. made, on the tables as well as different smaller centerpieces to reflect all of the different farmers' products from the growers' market.
That's great.
And a rainbow of colors. So it's going to be an ombre of just jewel tones and of chocolates to wines to oranges to ambers and rich purples, magentas, and then so on and so forth. So,
I'm just getting the shivers thinking about it.
And then adding all those Northwest yummy elements, like different mosses and ferns and a couple other little treats that I'm not going to give away yet.
Okay. You used the term, you told me you were coming up with a theme called Northwest Gothic or Washington Gothic or something like
yeah.
that. I love it.
Right. I want it to be, I want flowers to be sexy.
Yeah.
Right?
No pastels
yeah,
for you.
No.
Well, also we're kind of in this bridge season where summer is not over yet, but the gourds and the pumpkins and, you know, the ornamental squashes are all starting to show up. So you're almost into fall, and, you know, maybe that's part of the inspiration of being on Jellamold where mm-hmm. they grow that stuff, right? It'll be great. I'm excited.
Oh, it's going to be beautiful.
Well, also, Melissa, you are going to be asked to speak to the audience. So I think you'll have a chance to tell, you know, the 100 plus guests who are there why you're so inspired by this seasonal selection of flowers and foliage and ornamentals. And I think that's the whole purpose of that field-to-base dinner is to say, we're here eating a fabulous meal and drinking wonderful wine, and we're going to actually have hard cider as well, all produced locally in the Northwest, all from Washington State. What about the flowers? And, you know, this is your chance to really, I mean, if I think in a way you'll be preaching to the choir, but if you have that chance, what do you say to people about why they should care about the season and the place of the flowers that they purchase? I mean, do you have this conversation every day?
I don't. I maybe with myself mm-hmm. in my head.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe your customers are already trained but, and they're not having to be sold on this idea.
They come to me specifically because they know my focus
yeah.
and they know I'm going to have a good selection of flowers to choose from, and they're always going to be high quality flowers. And I wish I could easily say why I feel so strong about locally. I mean,
yeah, it's just who you are.
I grew up in a farming community. I'm old fashioned. Mm-hmm. I love supporting my old farmers and mm-hmm. and young farmers mm-hmm. as well.
Which we have some, yeah.
It just feels good.
Feels like the right thing to do.
It feels good to support your farmers, support your community, and the trickle down effect, and having it support the local waterways and the environments and the watersheds as well is an incredible added bonus to that. And the fact that they're so pretty mm. and they smell so good. Mm-hmm. I mean, what's not to love about any of that? And mm-hmm. why should it have an ugly pest and background? Why should it be dipped in vats of pesticides and then shipped all the way to the United States and gone through customs and then finally make it to your door? I mean, it's just
when
exhausting
it's like...
talking about it, let alone.
I know. I think of that as such a traumatic experience for the flowers.
Those poor little things.
Well, when I first met you, you were the first person who described to me that old-fashioned definition of florist, and that it was somebody who both grew and designed and sold flowers. Mm-hmm. And we got so far away from that in the 80s and 90s and into the 2000s, but you are really changing that in your practices. You maybe don't have a lot of stuff you're growing now, but over the years you have grown on your family property, and now you have new land that you're going to try to grow on, right?
Yes, we just bought acreage. We bought an old farmhouse over on one of the local islands here. And so I will be starting to grow some of my own greens and berries mm-hmm. and textures. Probably not the flowers because I'll leave that to the deer fodder.
Yeah.
But to be able to supplement with my own textures, I think I'm really excited about.
I think that'll be great. And that really fits with your kind of magical woodland creature character that I, and the moss.
Just that, add deer.
Yeah. So deer is a problem on the island you live on.
Right now, it's a big problem.
Yeah.
They're thirsty.
Deer are a problem.
They're thirsty.
Yeah.
They're hungry.
Yeah.
And they have no, outside of the occasional driver in the middle of the night, they have no...
They're on an island. They have no place to go, right?
They have no place to go, and they have no predators.
Oh, I see. Okay,
yeah,
wow.
There are lots of happy deer families.
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow. And so you're using some fencing to protect what you're... I mean, you've only lived in this property for a while, but is that your plan?
2 weeks.
So why not do a whole dinner for 150 people? Yeah, but I mean, you will have to rely on fencing then just to protect whatever you grow.
I will.
Yeah. I predict that community that you live on, there's so many people who are kind of avid gardeners or people who, you know, have natural habitats and stuff that's, you know, kind of hedgerows and forests, that you're going to find a lot of people who will be contributing to your palette and, you know, neighbors or whatever. And that will be, maybe that's how you'll make your friends.
I was driving home from work last night, and there was a little stand on the side of the highway, and it had dahlias cut from the garden in these little mason jars and a big sign saying free to enjoy. And it was a highway, so not many people are going to be wanting to stop on this busy road right after you get off the ferry and and grab free flowers. But I just thought that was so wonderful. I love living on the island. I love Vashon.
You're going to be like, I'm going to get to know that person.
Yeah, like, they have deer fencing. You really should grow this.
I love it. That's a great story. Well, I'm thrilled that we're going to be able to show photos of your design work and your shop and you, and connect our listeners with all your social places. I will have to promise to do a share of all the photos of next weekend's dinner, because this is going to run before the dinner. But it's the preview to get people excited about what they're going to experience. And really the whole mood is going to be set by the flowers. And lucky you, you're going to decorate a table in the middle of a dahlia farm. So it really...
So excited.
You have a backup, you know, the periphery is going to be designed as well.
Yeah.
That's great. Melissa, thank you so much. Is there anything I didn't ask you that you know we should talk about on this podcast?
Oh, I think we covered it.
It's been a long day. When you told me you've been up since 4:30, I thought, oh, thank you so much for saying yes to let me turn the recorder on.
Of course. My pleasure.
Adore you. I love your work. And I'm so glad that... I'm glad you said yes, and I'm just glad that you are part of teaching me and modeling for me so many things that I've learned since we met back 5 years ago. So thanks for all your involvement in creating what is now kind of this movement that everyone wants to be part of. It's exciting.
Thank you for being so supportive of me as well.
You bet. All right, our mutual love.
Yes.
Thanks, Melissa.
Thanks so much for joining me today. If you're in the Northwest and you want to experience the magic of Melissa's Northwest Gothic floral installation at the September 12th Field to Vase dinner, there's still time. A few tickets are still available, and I can't wait for you to be part of the evening on a flower farm. The link to reserve your seat at the table is at deborahprinzing.com, and I have a special discount code there for your use when purchasing your ticket. Episodes of the Slow Flowers podcast have been downloaded more than 63,000 times, and I thank the progressive floral community for supporting this endeavor. It is nothing short of inspiring to see the listenership increase each week, and we've received only 5-star reviews on iTunes, 22 in all. Until next week, you're invited to join me in putting more American-grown flowers on the table, one vase at a time. And if you like what you hear, please consider logging on to iTunes and posting a listener review. Thank you so much for downloading, listening, commenting, and sharing. The content and opinions expressed here are either mine alone or those of my guests alone, independent of any podcast sponsor or other person, company, or organization. The Slow Flowers podcast is engineered and edited by Andrew Wheatley and Hannah Holtgertz. Learn more about their work at shellandtree.com.